Welcome back to another edition of Herd Here First. Jim Lighthall, Derek Sharp back with you after a week hiatus, actually 2 weeks since we've done one of these, Derek, because of the bye week. No game last weekend. All of us needed a week away. The broadcasters, the coaches, the players, maybe the fans, I don't know, but this team is rolling. The South Florida Bulls now 3-1, and we finally get to American Conference play against Charlotte.
I don't know about you. I didn't mind the week off, but it's weird because, and you're going to hear especially Todd Orlando later on in the hour speak about it. It seems like it's been forever. I think maybe because of how well things were left and how the team's not hurt, which the two things you want to have a bye for when you're limping. And when you're not playing well, maybe you need to regroup. But it's just the opposite. The Bulls have no serious injuries, knock on wood once again. Hold on. And, they played pretty well last time out.
Yeah, it's always the cliche, this bye week comes at a good time because. But with this team, that really doesn't apply. They're playing well. The defense has been sensational. I think if you're looking for the brightest spot so far on a team that's 3-1 getting ready for conference play, you have to say the defense, especially based on where this defense was over the last couple of seasons.
It's insane. You know, we'll get more into the opponent later on, but some of the numbers, frankly, aren't good for Charlotte. But it reminds you, we are not that far removed from the numbers being, as Coach Golish would say, when he talked about the defense, the numbers are what they are, were what they were, and what a difference having the staff. We've talked about this in the past, but retained and just really zeroing in on the right kind of players. And boy, has it made a major, major difference. I know Miami got to them, but listen, Miami's going to get to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, when you look back at the last time this team played, which was a couple of weeks ago, September the 20th, beating South Carolina State at Raymond James Stadium, 63-14. I don't know which unit was better that day. Was it the offense or the defense? You put up 63 points, but remember, Mac Harris has the longest interception return for a touchdown in school history. He did so many good things. They hold a pretty decent South Carolina State team to 14 points. But again, Derek, what has happened with this team is the defense has carried the load early until the offense can get up to speed in these games. And then the offense really got up to speed, in particular, a school record 35 points in the third quarter alone.
Yeah, it was kind of microcosmic. That's definitely not a word, but you know what I'm trying to say about it. Didn't seem like the last game was one of those where, you know, it could hurt them not getting the offense going in time. But truly, it did take a while. Of course, when the other team gets the ball first and takes up half a quarter, the Bulls end up with the points anyway on defense. But it was just 21-7 at the half, and it didn't feel comfortable. And then it took, what, about 20 minutes of real time to get five touchdowns, and it was pretty darn comfortable. So that's a big credit to both sides of the ball. And I know starting on Friday against Charlotte, they'll try and get them both off on the right foot at the same time.
Well, here's the highlights from that day against South Carolina State at Raymond James Stadium when the Bulls won in a runaway.
Stubblefield rolling left, hit as he throws, picked Mac off. Harris. Mac Harris back the other way, crosses the 50. He's got blockers, and he's going to go untouched into the end zone. Touchdown, South Florida. Mac Harris. Pick six.
Good defense has been, but they don't break, Jim.
Bulls ready to go again in a hurry. Brown fakes the handoff. Throwing long, caught, touchdown. Into the end zone, Jonathan Echols. His second career touchdown. Lots of time. End zone shot, caught. Josh Porter, diving catch. Touchdown, South Florida. Taking a deep shot to Nimrod. Caught, touchdown, South Florida. 42 yards. First and 10. Here's Nekai Davenport with a carry, and he runs it right up the middle into the secondary and into the end zone. Welcome to the ball game.
Yeah, I'm sure he's like, hey, this is easy. You know, I just get off the bench.
Give me another carry. Blocked. Ball is loose at the 10. Picked up. Touchdown, South Florida. Another one for the Bulls. Franklin finds a hole. Pretty shifty run. Breaks some tackles. Gets into the open field. And he's going to take it to the end zone. How about that?
All right, Derek. So the Bulls are finished with the toughest non-conference schedule in America. Now you get ready for the American. And this includes the Charlotte 49ers, who many think might be the team that's struggling the most in this league. They're 1-3. They're 0-1 so far in the American. The Bulls have played them twice and beaten them handily both times, scoring 48 points back in 2023, 59 points in the game last year in Charlotte. They set a school record with over 400 yards rushing that day. And this is a Charlotte team that just doesn't return a whole lot. They fired their coach, remember, at the tail end of last year. They're trying to piece it together. And really, for the Bulls, you couldn't ask for a better opponent to start the American.
And also an injury at quarterback, even though they were given the guy that the Bulls expect to see as the starter sometime as well. But yeah, Biff Pogey, Bulls ended his Charlotte tenure. Actually, they went 6-16 in his 2 years. And after that romp that you referred to, he was out. They actually did win their last two games against FAU and UAB to finish at 5-7. But a program just in its 13th season, and it's pretty cool when you can have a theme, right? Their theme is their next win is going to be their 49th, 49ers. But in 13 seasons, that's not a lot of wins. So the Bulls should be able to handle business. But listen, it's going to be a team that's on the equal rest as the Bulls are.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll have that nothing to lose mentality showing off for the nation on television. Everyone's watching the game. So you're going to have a motivated group and a loose group going up against the Bulls.
You know, just to put that in perspective, they played some football back in the 40s. They played three or four seasons back at that point. So, Derek, they've had one winning season in 79 years when you go all the way back then. And then, as you mentioned, they resurrect the program and they've really struggled since then. Meanwhile, South Florida's won four of their last five, and they've won three straight at Raymond James Stadium, which, again, when you start talking about a successful team, you say you got to win your home games first and foremost, and then you got to win some on the road. And for the Bulls, that means you bury an opponent like Charlotte in your own building on Friday night.
And that's exactly what they've done to them the last 2 years. You can never assume it's going to be the same, but it's got to be the same. You know, there's other parts to the equation here. There's quote unquote, here we go, style points. And the Bulls certainly have shown they're capable of putting those up against specifically the 49ers. And by the way, we do call them the 49ers. It's okay. Don't call them UNC Charlotte, though, whatever
right.
you do. So it is definitely Charlotte.
Can I break out a Cornbread Maxwell reference at some point here? UNCC? Sure.
You better. You absolutely better. But the thing is, you mentioned win your home games. Boy, four conference games each on your home stadium and on the road, and three of those four on the road, just looking at it right now with North Texas, Memphis, and Navy, doesn't get any tougher than what the Bulls have ahead of them. So they can't look forward, obviously, but they have to take care of things against the 49ers.
Derek, you bring up a good point in that style points are going to matter. And with the Bulls right on the outside of the top 25 looking in, obviously you got to win a conference championship to get yourself in there. But they're 26th in the AP poll, 29 in the coaches poll. So style points matter. You got to blow out the bad teams. You got to beat the tough teams. And for this bunch, and Alex Golish, I like their chances on Friday night. I like their chances to put up a big number, which is very important on Friday night.
And you'll hear from both coordinators, Joel Gordon and Todd Orlando. Also, Joey Johnston sits down with the player every week. It's Thomas Schrader, one of those Tampa Bay kids that went elsewhere and came back home on the offensive line. In this case, you'll also hear my sit down with Joey Johnston, where we focus plenty on the fact that it is flashback Friday and the 1997 team will be commemorated with the helmets and the uniforms and everything.
Gonna be a lot of fun. Heard here first, just getting underway. We have an hour between Derek and I, and then another live hour from the stadium on Friday when the Bulls take on the Charlotte 49ers. This is Heard Here First on the South Florida Bulls Radio Network.
For 10 years in a row, Tampa General has been named the number one hospital in Tampa Bay by U.S. News and World Report. And once again, we're recognized as a top 50 hospital in the nation. This year in six specialties: diabetes and endocrinology, ear, nose, and throat, gastroenterology and GI surgery, heart and vascular care, obstetrics and gynecology, and urology. Tampa General, the region's only academic health system, a university-based program.
Welcome back to Heard Here First. Jim Lighthall, Derek Sharp with you as we get you ready for the South Florida Bulls and the Charlotte 49ers, a Friday night. Derek, this is game two of four weeknight games for the Bulls in this 2025 season as they get ready to open American Conference play. And hopefully the offense gets rolling and gets rolling early. Joel Gordon, the offensive coordinator, joins you coming up in just a moment. But this offense has kind of sputtered out of the gate through the first four games for whatever reason. Now, they're still 3-1. It hasn't cost them any games. The Miami game, I think they could have come out red hot, and it probably wouldn't have mattered either. But this offense has to get going right when that gate swings open in that corner end zone.
There you go. Halftime adjustments are spot on, but you're right. At the start of the game, for whatever reason, to shut out Florida and Boise in the third quarter, coinciding with a good, solid offensive quarter in both cases. But really, it doesn't take much. You go to the stats. The first stat that pops up on GoUSFBulls.com includes the first page anyway, the quarter by quarter. First quarter, South Florida, 10 points. Opponents, 24. Then a gradual improvement in the second quarter, 33-27 plus, and then 58-7 in the third quarter. So, yeah, I think the Bulls know it, and I think it'll be – I don't get too geeky when it comes to this stuff, but I think it could be a possibility anyway that if they win the coin toss, they might select to get the ball first, possibly that kind of thing, just to prove it. But we know that they'll get the ball quickly enough and want to work quickly and get on the board for a change.
Well, this isn't uncharted waters for this program, because remember last year we were talking about this stuff. I think they went five or six games in a row where they did not score first in a game.
Well, also I got to mention, I mean, it just popped into my head as we're talking about it, 24-10 opponents. The seven was a defensive touchdown, so no offensive touchdowns.
Right.
That's kind of going to the point of what we're saying.
We'll hear from Joel Gordon in just a second. I do want to touch on the fact that Sam Franklin, I'm really happy to see him starting to get involved in the offense. A much ballyhooed kid that played at the FCS level, was at Oklahoma last year, and he put up some big numbers at UT Martin. How about this, Derek? This kid was unranked when he came out of high school in Little Rock, Arkansas, and then he goes and tears it up at UT Martin, transfers to Oklahoma, and although he didn't get but 18 carries, he averaged over 7 yards per carry. And when you look at his career, he's averaging nearly 7 yards per carry, 6.8, and it's not a small sample size, almost 350 carries. This kid can produce, and we started to see him do that against South Carolina State.
And we saw some big hit ability, and let's face it, towards the end, that South Carolina State defense was dead tired. There were holes to be had. His, if you remember, you know, going back to the Nekhi Davenport 43-yarder, I mean, that was right when he got the ball, it was a touchdown. Both of Franklin's second-half touchdown runs of 30 and 54. He had to create a little bit, do some juking, and you could see. You could see once he gets that head of steam going, once he gets past the line of scrimmage, which wasn't a sure thing the first few games, he has a nose for the end zone, and that's important.
And the offense has been going with the hot back. Hopefully Sam Franklin stays hot. Let's hear from offensive coordinator Joel Gordon.
Good to see Joel Gordon once again, and I'm sure you didn't mind getting a few days away, such that they are. I know you guys don't just, you know, go to the beach or anything, but what was the bye week like before we get back to business for you personally?
Yeah, it was great. Got to spend a little bit more time with the family, which is when you get a little extra time, that's where it goes. So it was it was much needed.
I guess it doesn't hurt how you left off offensively, especially the third quarter. So what did you see all come together, other than a lot of guys getting out there on the field and showing their stuff?
Yeah, it was, you know, overcoming a slow start, I think, was the most important thing, you know, for us. And, man, our defense did a great job of changing the game, you know, with that interception. And we started off a little cold. And when we came out in the third quarter, you know, I think it was a combination of our tempo. You know, I think the other team was a little tired already. And we executed, you know, and we scored a bunch of touchdowns in 10 or 12 plays, which was, it was awesome to see. You know, it takes 11 guys to do their job at a high level for those explosive plays to happen, to have ball carriers not getting touched. Great protection. You know, we ran the ball well, we threw the ball well, so it was that's what we're capable of, and you know, it was great to see it.
It was one of those things where there were so many things that happened, you had to look at some after the game. One that stood out to me was you did not run a single play inside the red zone. Are you able to hit those explosive plays as a team more readily, because that was a pretty good example of it?
Yeah, that's our goal, you know, is to number one, be explosive, and man, it's okay to score, you know, from a long way away, and that's just okay. So if we don't get inside the red zone because we're scoring from out there, we're not going to be mad about it. But just happy for the guys. You know, it seems like a long time ago that game, but they did a nice job of responding to a little adversity in the first half. Just not starting great, turning the ball over before halftime, and putting our defense in a hole a little bit. But at the end of the day, we finished how we needed to finish.
One thing I know you would like to see continue on Friday is everybody getting involved in the running game. We've talked about Davenport a little bit. It was good to see Franklin break loose. And then Alvon had the quote-unquote worst stats, but he was great in the return game. So as a group, what do you think of those guys?
You said it, you know. Vaughn, you know, he made his impact, yeah. You know, in the game. It didn't happen probably exactly like it did for, you know, Sam. It was great for Sam to really be able to get on the field and stay on the field and get some extended drives. And, you know, a lot of those, you know, he had one where it was just a one-play drive. But it was great for his confidence, you know. He's been getting better every single week, and I think that was a product of his, you know, his preparation, his work, and it's been showing up more in practice, and it came to life in the game. And it was great for Nakai to get that first touchdown run for him after coming off an ankle through fall camp. So it's been great to have those guys be productive.
We had Byram on the coach's show this week, and one thing that really lit him up was just the thought of working with his offensive line. It wasn't the typical answer. It was you could really tell how much he appreciates what those guys are doing for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's – that relationship between the quarterback and the guys that, you know, make everything go, that's got to be there has to be a genuine connection because you understand what those guys are going through. And I think Byram understands that, and they're doing all the dirty work, and not a lot of praise in the paper or wherever it is for those guys, but he understands, you know, without those guys, he's not able to do his job and we can't function. So we got a really good, you know, dynamic and relationship with our guys on offense, and it makes it even more fun, you know, to go play that way and to be able to enjoy those times together.
And it was hard for me to believe that he just turned 21. Seems like he's a little bit older than that. Is that hard to believe for you?
It is. It doesn't seem like that long ago that he was just turning, you know, 19, you know, his first year. You know, we had already played a month into the season, and that to me, at that point, that was amazing that he was all the things that he had done already at 18 years old at that point. But, man, time is going fast, and he's still young. But, man, he's grown up in a big way, so we're excited for him.
And last thing, a word on the opponent, Charlotte. What do you see from their defense?
Yeah, I see a group that it's their first year, you know, at Charlotte. They have a new system. There's a lot of new players than what it was a year ago. So they're trying to figure out themselves, you know, as much as anything. And I think you go back in the history of this coaching staff and what they've put on the field, they've always put out good defenses. And they play really hard. They're consistently playing hard. They're gonna make it tough for you at the line of scrimmage. They're moving all over the place. And they're sound. So they're going to be disciplined, and I feel like they've been more physical every week of the year, and they're starting to get a little bit more confidence every single week. So, you know, we've got our job to do is to go out there and to control the line of scrimmage and to attack these guys and play our brand of football.
Keep going. Thanks, Joel.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
So, Derek, you don't ever want to be the team that the other team starts to figure out all their woes against. Yeah. Charlotte, as we mentioned, is 1-3. They're 0-1 inside the league, having been beaten by Rice. But this is an entirely different coaching staff than we saw last year as well. And this is a coaching staff that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, 3 straight 10-win seasons for Tim Albin at Ohio U, which is crazy because they had never had back-to-back 10-win seasons in their entire history, which is 130 years. We'll talk more about what his actual new team is doing this year, but they've been hanging around in games for a bit. The one thing that I certainly think that the Bulls, and again, we'll give you some more specific numbers in our segment after the next one, but do is throw the ball, because teams have definitely been able to do that, rack up some numbers against that Charlotte defense so far this year.
All right, again, more on the 49ers coming up in just a bit. Also, Derek sits down with Joey Johnston for some inside knowledge on this one. You're listening to Herd Here First on the South Florida Bulls Radio Network.
You know what's better than a limited-time deal? An unlimited-time deal. That's why the Wendy's $5 Biggie Bag with a Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, 4-piece nugs, Junior Hot and Crispy Fries, and small soft drink is available all the time. Because the best time for fresh, never-frozen beef and Applewood smoked bacon is all the time. Duh. I feel like I'm repeating myself a lot. For the best deal of all time, gotta be Wendy's.
Unlimited time does not mean forever. U.S. price and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Alaska, Hawaii, and California via third-party delivery. Fresh beef available in the contiguous U.S., Alaska, and Canada.
Back inside with Joey on our Inside with Joey segment. Have moved it inside to the, let's just say something about where we are right now, because everyone knows what the IPF looks like, I assume. But just in the last, there's Coach Moros of women's tennis. In the last year or so, this lobby to the Selman Athletic Center has undergone some incredible improvements.
Yeah, it used to be sort of like a little museum with exhibits and trophy cases and all that, and they cleared those out. I don't know where the trophies went. They're somewhere around here, I guess. But it's more wide open, more airy, kind of a social space for everybody, and you get to look up and see pictures of all the USF All-Americans, the Hall of Famers, the conference champions, and then the Bulls Club Legends, as they call it, the people who have given $1 million to USF Athletics. So
where's your name on there?
Not there yet. I'm saving up. I'm trying to get to that $1 million. You know, hoping some interest kicks in.
But in the interest of the student athletes, it's a great area to set up and talk and do your work, and we're doing a little bit of both here. We'll get into some fun stuff for sure, but not that this isn't going to be fun because of what happened last time out, but the trivia is coming. Let's ask what you think after four games in general with this team. I think 3-1 and how they're playing is about where you'd want to be.
I mean, you know, again, it's one of the questions you always hear. Hey, if we went back 3 months ago and told you they'd be 3-1, would you take that? Absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't see that in my crystal ball necessarily. I legitimately, or realistically, I guess I should say, hoped for a win against one of the three power teams that were on the schedule. Got two, Boise State and Florida. And Miami was a loss, but Miami might not lose many, if any, the rest of the year. And so sitting here at 3-1 is a very good place to be and a great entree into the American Conference schedule.
We certainly are not looking past Charlotte. I know the team's not, but I think the conference has taken on a little bit of different toughness to it. Specifically, if you look at the fact that the Bulls go to three of those tough teams and still undefeated teams, North Texas, Memphis, and Navy, so they can't mess around on Friday. And if you're just assuming, hey, they've made it through this part of the schedule looking good, it's going to be a cakewalk through conference, no way.
Yeah, and you learn these lessons over and over again. It never fails how, you know, the mind goes ahead. Sometimes I know a couple weeks ago, the national media were saying, oh my gosh, USF, they're a lock for the college football playoff. Well, not really. I mean, still could happen, but there's a lot that has to happen in the interim. And as you mentioned, the three undefeated teams left in the American, USF plays them all and all on the road. So a very difficult schedule ahead. USF will have to earn it, and it does begin with Charlotte, and you certainly have to take them one at a time. It's such a cliche, but in conference season, you can't look past anything because one bad night and everything gets ruined, so you've got to take care of business against Charlotte.
We always talk about your work on GoUSFBulls.com. I want you to take people behind the work, because I'm sure by now, the time they've heard this, they have seen, hopefully if they haven't, go see it now on GoUSFBulls.com, the USF trivia, 29 questions for every year USF football. Before we get into some of the questions, how much work went into it? I mean, it was well done.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of it was, you know, I was there. I was there covering it at the time. So a lot of it I knew, but these are the things I enjoy, just kind of looking up things or going back over old stories and having things triggered in my own mind and trying to be a little creative with it. So just kind of a thing where, you know, it's flat, it's throwback Friday with the Robo Bowl logo, obviously. And, you know, everybody's in a nostalgic frame of mind, trying to talk about that 97 season. So it's just a way to kind of either remind people or probably educate them more often, because, you know, we're getting older, Derek. At least I am. And there's not a lot of people that
Jim Lighthall's not, but we both are.
Yes, Jim Lighthall never ages. But, you know, 97, some people weren't born yet. That's the thing I have to get through my head. I'm talking to some people around USF, and they weren't born yet. Kaylee Cottrell was in her diapers. So, you know, the perspective.
Interviewing mom.
And the perspective of that is a little odd sometimes. But anyway, we tried to have a little fun with it, and it certainly was a unique start to this program and that season. So that's what we're trying to do, is get everybody in the mood for a kind of a throwback atmosphere on Friday night.
Okay, so some of the multiple choice options that you knew were wrong, I actually thought, I think that might have actually happened. My favorite definitely was, what national record did USF set institutionally during 1997. And I thought most students participating in an ultimate Frisbee competition, how the heck did you come up with that as an option? And what was the actual answer?
The actual answer is USF was the fastest school in U.S. history to graduate 150,000 students, which is a cool accomplishment when you think about it. But, you know, one of the other, this could have actually been true. One of my choices I put was most parking tickets distributed. I mean, that could have actually happened. I think some people would probably guess that and maybe be right. I don't know.
I love the stuff. All right. So what's some of the response you've been getting, and has anybody that's been some of the answers or wrong answers gotten with you?
Yeah, it's I think the most thing I've gotten is people who've learned things for the first time. They're taking the quiz, but they're trying to learn as much as they can about the 97 season. You know, a lot of younger people and a lot of people who came from other places who've heard the legend of how things got started and you know, maybe have part of the story but not the whole story. And it's a great story. It really is, how this thing got off the ground. So I think everybody's just kind of got a cool backdrop to the whole thing. And for the most part, I think, you know, everybody's excited about that logo, that Robo Bull logo that we're going to see on Friday night.
I assume you have some still in your collection. I love the fact that whoever came up with the photo of the Ponderosa, the main trailer, was included in the article. And then last thing, I love the fact that you went, I guess you, this could not have been by memory. You had to go to the roster and check out which had the most high school.
Yes, I had to do some research, and either going back through old stories or old media guides. And, you know, it's like one of those things where you're just sitting around, you're just trying to dream a little bit about potential questions and things pop into your head. But that was, you know, hey, what school put the most players on this roster? And there's, you know, there was one guy from out of Florida that on the first one. Wow. And everybody else was from Florida. So you know, the guesses on this quiz are Clearwater, Bradenton Southeast, Lake Wales, and Hillsboro. And I don't want to give it away, but the answer is Hillsboro. The Hillsboro Terriers put four players on that inaugural USF football roster.
Okay, I'm going to put you on the spot because I am Mr. Mascot Nicknames. Rattle off the nicknames of those four schools.
Clearwater Tornadoes, Bradenton Southeast Seminoles, Lake Wales Highlanders, and the Hillsboro Terriers. And I am a nicknameophile as well, Derek.
Okay, and we'll have to continue that some other time obviously.
That's a knockout game.
You crushed it.
You might be one of the only people I think that would be interested and keep up with me, actually. So we're going to definitely have to do that.
I understand on both. Hey, save up that voice for Thomas Schrader. We'll talk to you later on in the show, and then see you on Friday night. Thanks a lot, Joey.
Thank you, Derek.
All right, so that's Derek and Joey there with the inside knowledge. Listen, if you want old-time trivia, pop culture, whether it's 70s, 80s, 90s, Joey Johnston is my source. That's who I go to. We have a lot of great discussions on the road, Derek, with the basketball team, and we try to stump different people with different things. But his quiz this week on the GoUSFBulls.com was rock solid on South Florida football.
I got to say, the one that made me laugh the most is who sang the national anthem. The first option was Taylor Swift, obviously, and it was ended up being Belinda Womack. But I love the fact that the fourth option, he threw in Sophia Chepnick, who is, of course, the member of the women's lacrosse team, still a student, so she wouldn't have been around for that one. But she sings the national anthem, too, so I just – Joey every now and then, he's like Jim Lauk, man. You stick around him long enough, he's going to make you bust a gut. It's just like it's a sneak attack.
Here's something that I don't think anyone knows, any listeners know right now, but a couple years ago, we all got together at World of Beer for a little broadcast meeting before the season started, and Joey surprised all of us by pulling out some papers that had a quiz on it that were some really tough South Florida football history questions, and we went through them, and we did our best, and I thought it was a ton of fun that night. Mm-hmm. They were hard questions, too.
I would like to know the genesis of, other than it's just what it looks like, who came up with the phrase Robo Bull? There's one for you.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
My friends have called it the mechanical goat since that day, which I always thought was a pretty good one as well, but I think they all apply in that situation.
Well, I think Joey is definitely going to have a full – he'll be the one guy on our staff that has the Robo Bull prominently displayed on all of his garments.
He's been wearing them still, I think, since 1997, so it's not a big stretch for him. All right, Heard Here First continues. The Bulls and the Charlotte 49ers on the South Florida Bulls Radio Network.
Flight by Yuengling. It's the next generation of light beer. For those who don't follow trends, but craft them. Flight by Yingling is 12 ounces of uncompromised refreshment from America's oldest brewery. With only 2.6 grams of carbs and 95 calories, this is premium refreshment six generations in the making. Don't just raise a glass, raise the bar. Flight by Yingling. Available wherever beer is sold. DG Yingling & Son Incorporated, Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Please enjoy responsibly.
Jim Lighthall, Derek Sharp back with you on Heard Here First, getting you ready for the South Florida Bulls and the Charlotte 49ers as we start American Conference play. Some teams have already played a game, Derek, like the 49ers. They played a couple weeks ago. They've had the bye week as well. They took on Rice 28-17 and really couldn't figure out that option attack as two new coaches squared off against each other. Let's dive into this Charlotte team a little bit more. Again, struggled a year ago, not quite as bad as a lot of people thought they were going to. They finished 5-7, and they were 4-4 in the league, which, by the way, was tied with South Florida last season. But yep, it was their fifth straight losing season, and they had a new coach by the start of this year.
Yeah, got those two wins for the interim coach, but that was sort of playing out the string. And as we know, FAU and UAB, the two teams they beat, at the end struggled. They did have one impressive win where they put up 55 against East Carolina. So basically, they were the best of that group at the bottom of the conference. But overall, some change had to be made. And boy, to take the MAC champion, Tim Albin, who is just actually celebrated his 60th birthday with their only win of the season. And we alluded to it earlier, doing incredible things at Ohio U. Three straight 10-win seasons. Actually, last year became an 11-win season. That was a bowl victory. And they were fantastic there. And he was kind of a Frank Solich guy. People remember.
Yeah.
Frank Solich got that Ohio U program going. He actually had two stints there. And this was his guy. Albin was his guy. And he actually started off as a GA with him at Nebraska. And guess what he knows about? Running the football.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that was his position as far as coaching at Nebraska. And check this out. At Ohio U, as he was also there before being the head coach the last 4 years as the OC, 6 1,000-yard rushers during his time there. They've only had 14 in their history. And again, their 130-year history at Ohio U. He had 6 of their 14,000-yard rushers during his time. He had the top 3 passers all time at Ohio U during his time there. So it's an offense that once it gets the right pieces,
right,
is going to get cranking. You absolutely know this. Right now, it's year one of trying to collect those pieces, and they're just not quite all there yet.
He's a real interesting story, Derek. And go back a little farther when he was at Northwestern Oklahoma State. He was the 1999 National Coach of the Year in NAIA, went undefeated, won the national title. He was there 3 years, went 25-8. Then he's an assistant for 20 years, like you were talking about with Frank Solich, was kind of attached to the hip with him in Nebraska and Ohio, was also at North Dakota State, which we know is a really good program.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people just thought, well, he's happy being an assistant. And then he takes over when Solich decides to retire, and he does great at Ohio. And now he's three bowl appearances there, and now he's turned that into this job at Charlotte, which I think a lot of people would look at and go, one of the toughest jobs in America at Charlotte.
It's a unique stadium, Jerry Richards Stadium. Speaking of unique, it's going to be the team that plays at JRS against the team that plays at RJS. But they had to add 2,500 temporary bleachers so that they could draw 19,000 against Bill Belichick and North Carolina. So you just don't have a natural huge crowd. I've actually been there when women's basketball played Charlotte. Of course, I run every campus that mm-hmm. is runnable, and Charlotte's is the best as far as that goes. And when you walk up on the concourse, you are at the top of the stadium.
Yeah.
Looking down, it's almost like a pit. It's unusual. It's unusual. Of course, we don't have to worry about that on Friday night. But yeah, you could see where people might forget about the football program if you just pass by it. But listen, I think this is the right guy. And the other thing about it is he has pulled some guys that were in big name schools mm-hmm. and they are producing so far on offense. You look at their top receiver. He's an LSU guy who, of course, had trouble cracking the lineup there. But Javon Nicholas, in 4 games, 22 catches for 270 yards. And their quarterback, unfortunately, who got hurt last time out against Rice a couple of Fridays ago, Connor Harrell, he had a 382-yard passing game recently. He was actually with North Carolina and started against Charlotte last year, although, of course, Tim Albin wasn't around to watch that. And they've got a mix at running back, but you could see he's got some skill pieces. You got to build up the offensive line, though, and that's also a tough part of it.
Well, and he's had to go the transfer route, which is what a lot of first-year coaches do. I mean, Alex Golish did it when he first got to South Florida. They had the least experienced team in the country coming back out of everybody this year. One starter back on offense, two starters back on defense. So he's got to rebuild the whole thing. And there's a familiar name calling plays on the offensive side, Todd Fitch, who was the offensive coordinator here at South Florida in 2010 through 2012 under Skip Holtz. And remember, he tutored B.J. Daniels. I'm sure Sam Barrington will talk about him during the course of the broadcast because those two were on those teams together as well. So he's had to piece it together. You're right. And Rod Gainey Jr. is one of those running backs you're talking about. There's a Tampa Bay kid, Tampa Bay Tech product that was a three-star product that USF offered, UCF offered, and he decides to go away and go to Charlotte. So they are probably, you know, a couple years away, and if his track record is any indicator, they're going to be competitive down the road.
Gainey came off a 52-yard game in their loss to Rice. Now, I said they hung around in a couple of their losses. App State, they had the lead going into the second quarter, then 27-0 in the middle quarters, ends up being 34-11. I mentioned being able to possibly throw the ball against this team. A.J. Swan of App State threw for 368 yards, 31 of 46. His best performance since then was 19 of 34, nowhere near the same yards. He just, as App State played Boise State, they got wiped out by Boise State, by the way, and he was just 11 for 24 for 64. Then they played North Carolina and did nothing offensively. They lost that game 20-3. They tried to establish a run. It didn't happen. And their one win against Monmouth, it was a back-and-forth affair. Now, Monmouth is 3-1, and they score a lot of points, but it was 42-35, and Monmouth's quarterback, Derek Robertson, I found this fascinating, threw for 410 yards and four scores against them. So I'm like, okay, what is this kid doing in his other game? His average passing per game, Monmouth's quarterback, is 410.
Wow.
So whether or not he's solid as a FCS quarterback, the point is you can throw the ball against his team. And then last week against Rice, who is not going to try to throw the ball against you.
No.
They couldn't stop the run, and they couldn't get it going on their own end. And again, their quarterback, Harrell, gets hurt. In comes Grayson Loftus, a former Duke player who actually started five games as a redshirt freshman at Duke. Throws for 186. So they've had some time to get him ready, and the Bulls haven't had as much time to see him. So that's another thing that could favor Charlotte.
Yeah, both teams coming off the bye week. And for Charlotte, believe it or not, this team has not left the city of Charlotte to play a football game yet. They've had three at home, all those games you've been talking about. And then their first game against App State was actually where the Panthers play. So again, they're going on the road basically for the first time this year.
Yes, and let's have a good crowd on Friday night, folks. I mean, last time was a tough draw, not a name opponent, and it was scorching hot on a Saturday afternoon. But I'm feeling it, man. I'm feeling it Friday night. And, you know, you've got four chances to watch the guys at home and really try and help them through what we hope is going to be a special season from a crowd perspective. Their last game against Rice ended up being 28-17 last week, and that was Charlotte tacking on a touchdown at the very end. Navy, by the way, has already played three games and is 3-0. They have not played any of the other, so to speak, what we see anyways being top teams. That would be your Bulls, Memphis, Tulane, and North Texas, who's the Bulls' next opponent. But in a game that could be quick, Navy steps out of conference to host Air Force, so Navy looking to go to 5-0 in that one. It'll be Army at UAB and UTSA at Temple. UTSA, I think, is a like a dark horse possibly in this whole situation, and another team that's on the Bulls' home schedule. FAU is at Rice. Rice looking to keep on winning. They are 3-2 under the new coaching staff.
And FAU Memphis was down a point to Memphis at half, and then they got blown out in the second half. And now, you know, let me just jump in real quick, because Memphis is now all of a sudden the flavor of the week. You know, South Florida, with the great start that we had, everybody's talking about them, lose to Miami. Memphis beats Arkansas because Arkansas fumbles at the 10-yard line. They beat them by one at home. Arkansas has fired their coach, but now everybody's like, well, Memphis beat Arkansas. They're better than South Florida. They're the team to beat in the group of five.
I don't
get that, you know?
Well, here's I'm just going to calm you down. And anyone that feels like you, and I love the passion.
There's a lot of us out there, yeah.
They do play each other in a couple weeks.
And, right, and it will all get settled at that point.
It will,
right.
Definitely. I love that part of it, and that won't be easy. But all of what you said is true, especially how Arkansas followed it up with not exactly giving Notre Dame much of a contest. Memphis is that 5-0 team hosting Tulsa, so really none of those top teams are going up against each other this week. So we hope that everybody sort of just, quote-unquote, TCBs it and takes it to the next part of the schedule, which is going to be – a daunting one for USF in particular.
All right, football dominating the weekend. Friday night game against Charlotte. We'll kick things off at 7 o'clock at Raymond James Stadium. A little flashback Friday, as it'll be old time. I say old time. That sounds like 50s. It's not going to be 50s music, but there will be retro music. The Robo Bowl helmet, a little retro uniform look there, and the Bulls will take on the 49ers. You are listening to Heard Here First. We will continue and talk defense next on the South Florida Bulls Radio Network.
Bulls Unlimited is your 24/7 home for all South Florida sports.
It is good!
Now in our ninth year of streaming around the clock, Bulls Unlimited is available via the TuneIn app. Just search Bulls Unlimited. Also available on GoUSFBulls.com. Head to the Fans tab where you can also get our weekly schedule, which includes Bulls Beat, hosted by yours truly, Derek Sharp. The half-hour show filled with news, highlights, and interviews airs every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Of course, we bring you Bullseye with head coach Alex Golish.
Thank you, go Bulls.
We'll also have live play-by-play of select soccer and volleyball matches this fall. And when November rolls around, once again, Bulls Unlimited is your home for live men's and women's basketball play-by-play.
Three ball, right side, yeah!
Wow!
We also dig into the archives for classic hoops as well as football.
Brody in the shotgun, looking for the end zone. Caught! Jesse Hester! Touchdown! The Bulls beat Auburn!
So if you haven't already, follow us on X at Bulls Unlimited and download Bulls Unlimited on the TuneIn app.
Hey Bulls fans, visit Hooters for a USF Bulls away game party. Hang with Rocky and have a chance to win USF home game tickets and Bulls gear while you watch the game. Visit originalhooters.com/bulls to get all the details on dates and locations. And don't forget to register for your chance to win a Hooters USF catered tailgate at the November 6th UTSA game. Hootie and Rocky will pay a visit to your tailgate and see your new USF tent and chairs. Visit originalhooters.com/bulls for all the details. Hooters, get your game on.
Heard Here First continues. Jim Lighthall, Derek Sharp with you. We record this a little earlier in the week for the Friday night game against Charlotte. And then we have a live pregame show from the stadium that will start at 6 p.m. right up until the 7 o'clock kickoff between the Bulls and the 49ers. Derek, we've covered the offensive side of the ball. You had a chance to talk with Todd Orlando on defense a little bit. Your impressions after the bye week for his bunch?
We're a really good defense. You wanted me to do an impression. I didn't really.
Yeah,
have
that wasn't a very good impression. Right.
It was a good bounce back, obviously, from Miami, where they had some situations that, again, people against Miami are going to run into, namely, the quarterback has all day to throw, and you can't give a guy that's that good in back to begin with that much time. But the leadership of the defense is phenomenal. You know, we talked a lot about Josh Seldeskar at the beginning of the year. He's starting to make even more plays. And just what I love about that defensive line is, for the most part, it's staunch against the run. I mean,
yeah.
It's not like, and we know Fletcher from Miami was an exception, but it's not like teams are able to just slam it down the Bulls' throat. They are ready, and, of course, with those B-backers helping out and with Mac Harris and Jalen Shuler just putting on clinics and how to form tackle. And that's the other thing that we don't talk about all that much when it comes to the secondary. Those guys are really good tacklers. We're not seeing nearly as many missed tackles. And that, you know, that's a difference sometimes between a, you know, 4-yard gain and a 24-yard gain. And it's tending towards the smaller number every time with the Bulls these days.
Going back to the defensive line, Derek, their job is to clog space. They don't get the ink that the ends get or those blitzing linebackers get for sacks, but they wanna clog up the middle and allow Mac Harris and Jalen Shuler to make tackles, and they're making plenty of those. So some credit goes to Kevin Patrick. And since it's flashback Friday for this game against Charlotte, doggone it, Kevin Patrick better lead that team out of the tunnel, because he was the guy that led that 97 team out of the tunnel at then Houlihan Stadium in the opener against Kentucky Wesleyan. So if they don't get anything right with this flashback Friday, they better get that right that night.
That's pretty much a no-brainer right there. I don't even think they have to go to him. It's going to be like, yeah, I'm doing that. And Alex Golish is also sharp enough. Quick note. You know, while I'm thinking of it on Coach Golish, and we love KP, and we'll get back to the defense in a second. When I tape with Kaylee and Joey, the coach's show, it's usually every Tuesday. And the only exceptions this year are for the two Thursday night games. But Joel Gordon wasn't sure, so he actually came over to me Tuesday, because I usually talk to him on Wednesday. Get this just in, we're not doing these interviews live. And he just wanted to be sure. And then he said, because is Al doing his thing? And I'm like, who's Al?
Yeah.
So that's what he calls Alex Golish, I guess. Oh. I guess. Exactly. Your reaction was the same as mine. Like,
yeah.
Who is Al?
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm ready to call Coach Polish Al, but
just drop an Al on him the next time you do that show. Just see how it goes over.
I don't think you can call me Al when it comes to him. That might be an inside thing. It might have been too inside, but I thought it would make you laugh, and it did.
Yeah, that's good.
All right,
good.
Back to the
that's
coaching good. Staff, KP and T.O.
Well, you were talking about the defensive backfield and their ability to get guys on the ground in space, and one of those guys that I think is kind of flying under the radar is Jarvis Lee. Had the big interception against Miami. And again, they're all Florida kids. We know that, but he's a Duval County kid, so Sam Barrington's going to love him being from Jacksonville. He's had a really nice season so far. Got his first career interception, as I mentioned, against Miami. But it's not like he's splashed on the scene. I mean, the kid played 24 games over the last couple of seasons. So what I'm getting at here is this is a guy that's put in his time under Todd Orlando and Al Golish, and he's now getting rewarded with playing time, and he's rewarding them with good play.
He's able to do everything in that secondary, and he can play any position, and I happen to know he studies quite a bit, and they love him for it. But it's like some of the guys you almost forget about. You can't almost forget about Deshaun Rucker, but because of some of the other playmakers in that secondary, like a Bobo Chenault, incredible interceptions this year, like Fred Gaskin, what he's doing back there as a true sophomore, one of the newcomers, Jonas DeClone, is doing. I mean, you actually could go on and on with that secondary. It's awesome.
Well, and Derek, we've talked in prior shows about recruiting, and Jarvis Lee is one of those guys that, you know, he comes in a couple years ago in a really highly ranked recruiting class, and he's starting to pan out. We shouldn't be surprised, because when you look at the schools that were after Jarvis Lee out of Green Cove Springs Clay High School, Georgia Tech, Virginia, Colorado, Iowa State, Missouri, Pitt, Purdue, Vandy, West Virginia, and USF beats him out for this kid, and look at him producing. So we shouldn't be surprised. He was a legit talent coming out of high school, and he's just another guy that's been in those recruiting classes that have been top of the group of five.
Part of that whole situation was him realizing that he had the talent to be a big D1 guy, and he spent that last year at IMG. It was almost one of those where, well, you go there, the chances of you getting
exposure, you know, yeah,
somewhere else outside of Tampa Bay, even though he's not a Tampa Bay kid, is certainly on the table. So it's another feather for the Bulls that they were able to grab a guy. Anybody can get out of IMG is usually going to be a good score.
Another weapon for Todd Orlando on the defensive side. Derek had a chance to talk with T.O.
We're not going
to
relive too much of what happened in the last game because it's history, but I know you probably enjoyed seeing Mac Harris take one back, turning back to a quarterback and showing off those skills, but also it felt like the special team score was also a defensive score. You got to see some of those guys eat a little bit. What did you think overall?
Yeah, it was good. You know, didn't necessarily like them driving the ball down the field initially, but I thought Jarvis did a really good job. You know, he sat in, showed a zone look, and then pressured the quarterback. So credit to him, and he followed Mac all the way down the sidelines. It was one of those things where it was like initially, like, what's going on here? To when Mac scored, it was like I felt like the momentum swung, and then the guys took care of business. Then, you know, Stokes, he does a really good job of busting through. It's something we work every day, and he just did it perfect technically. And the best part about that game, we were able to play a whole bunch of guys and on the half of football for the majority of our starters, and the other kids got in there. So right now we're going on really 2 weeks out from not having to play a game. So our guys should be fully rested, emotionally ready, and ready to go.
One thing that people usually, it's the first thing when they say when there's a bye, you need some guys to get rested up. You have injuries. Knock on wood, that's been a pretty good thing. Who do you attribute that to, or in general, what do you?
Well, I think the majority of things that happen in football, you know, are really based on fundamentals, you know, having good technique and then playing really, really hard. I think if you do those two things, you'll lessen the opportunities to get hurt. But this game is this game. So it's like anything else. You can get hurt at any time. We've been fortunate so far. But I think the big part about the bye week that also helps is like people don't realize how much of a mental strain this can be too. So, you know, we started off on the tail end of July. We had an early game with Boise, and then we went 4 weeks into camp and then go into 4 weeks there. So a lot of these kids are on week, you know, 9 and 10.
That's right.
So it's not as easy as that. They've already started up school, so it's just not go up and go to your house and then show up for meetings and play football. These guys are student athletes. So be able to decompress, and AG gave them a couple days off, you know, here and there. They still lifted and still ran, but kept them away from football a little bit, then rolled right into it and was able to prep them and get ready for Charlotte.
So after all those weeks, I know you're pretty happy with
where things are, but how much better can they be?
You know, it's it'll be interesting to go into it. This has felt abnormally long for some reason. You know, normally you get a bye week and the bye week goes so fast that you really don't even realize it was a bye week. This seems to be dragging a little bit for us. So I think we'll be excited to go back on the field again. It feels like we've been away for a minute. But this whole thing, this whole organization is being run by the older guys. You know, they've been very professional. That's where we're completely different than we've been in the past. We've guys that understand the standard, that are going out there doing it themselves and upholding people to the standard. So you don't worry about the you know, guys going out to practice and not being real fired up. You know, if you're a younger guy and you're watching the older guys work and the older guys get on the younger guys quite a bit when they're not going to it, that's a really healthy thing. And that's how we're growing as a program.
Two things that Byram said, just we had him on with Coach Golish on the TV show. And one was that you came up to him before the SC State game and said, hey, man, when are you going to run somebody over? He said he didn't realize that impacted the other side so much.
Now, AG does not want him running people over. But Coach Orlando does want him to run him over. I thought that was the play of the game. The guy's like, you know, from a mindset standpoint, is because you look at it on the other side and it's like, you know, the QB is it. Like, that's it. That's that he represents really the whole offensive side. But in real talk, it's like he represents the team. He's the face of the program. And then when he did that, it was like, that's our face of the program. One of the nicest human beings on the planet. Super polished, handsome kid. He got everything going for him, but he can run you over too. And then when you have somebody like that, you have something really special.
And the other thing people, I was surprised to hear, you think, okay, his roommate's going to be a running back or receiver, but it's Tavin. Those guys get along in a unique way?
Yeah, they do. Like Byram to me is like, Byram gets it. You know, he connects people together, and you need that. There's two positions in an organization here is the linebacker position and the quarterback position. They have to be the connecting points to both sides. They got to be connecting points to the head football coach and the culture that we do. So we're in really good shape. You know, I think Byram's doing a really good job. Mac Harris is doing a really good job over on our side, trying to keep everybody together. You know, the last thing you want is people pointing fingers and doing all that stuff. They don't. They rally for each other. You know, you see the offensive guys when we're out there making explosive plays. They're cheering us on, and we're doing the same thing for them.
And last thing, like you said, it's been forever, but you've had plenty of time to look at Charlotte. What do you think they're going to bring to you?
If they could finish a handful of plays that they've missed, then you're looking at a different ball club right now. You know, you watch the Rice game, and you watch a couple guys that are open, they got the ball to them, and they drop the ball. And then you watch some of the plays that are up front, or a handful of times where keep your feet, it's going to be a touchdown. So, you know, as they try to put their stuff together, and obviously we both had the same bye week. So both teams are going to have a chance to kind of reboot, re-energize, to get back into it. So that's the part that makes it a little bit scary, is you look at it and say, okay, what did they figure out based on the stuff that they're doing? What do they want to change? Do they want to add some more wrinkles to it? And we go out here, and me personally, as much as we look at an opponent, is just continue to check ourselves up. And that's been our kind of theme here, is the opponent comes in here, the opponent is the opponent, but let's worry about being the best version of ourselves through practice, doing things the right way, and see where we go from there.
Yeah, I think it'll be in a good direction if you keep it up. Thanks, Coach.
Yeah, appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, so that's defensive coordinator Todd Orlando. I love when the offense and defense talk about each other, Derek, because so many times when you look over on that sideline, the defensive guys are with the defensive guys, the offensive guys are with the offensive guys. But as Todd Orlando mentioned there with his discussion with Byram Brown, they always have an eye on what's going on the field.
I would not be surprised if there's an opportunity for Byram to, and he kind of talked with us on the show about it. In fact, let me drop in that sound clip here because it's pretty darn entertaining.
With the first game being back out there, you know, getting down to the goal line, I mean, I felt like it could give the team a jolt of energy.
Gave
so, you know, I had seen him coming. He didn't look like he looked like he was about to hit me. So I said, should I do it? And I did it, and then, you know, the rest is history from
Message
there.
Message sent, man. Good job.
Yeah, so I just wanted to set the tone there.
Maybe not the very first opportunity against Charlotte, but if there's a hard yard to gain, you know, and he sees the marker and he needs to go over somebody to get to it, he's not going to go around him. He's going to go over him. Love it. And you're right. You could just tell by that conversation with Todd Orlando
how the sides get along. It's just what you dream of. It's what you want.
Bulls and Charlotte coming up on a Friday night from Raymond James Stadium. Joey Johnson's player profile with Thomas Schrader's coming up, and then we'll wrap things up for the hour. This is heard here first on the South Florida Bulls Radio Network.
For 10 years in a row, Tampa General has been named the number one hospital in Tampa Bay by U.S. News and World Report. And once again, we're recognized as a top 50 hospital in the nation. This year in six specialties: diabetes and endocrinology, ear, nose, and throat, gastroenterology and GI surgery, heart and vascular care, obstetrics and gynecology, and urology. Tampa General, the region's only academic health system, a university-based program.
You know the power and energy the Bulls bring every game day. Imagine that same energy powering your home. With Lunex Power, you can harness the sun's force just like our teams harness their drive on the gridiron. Get in the game with an environmentally friendly, cost-saving solar electric system and score big savings on your energy bills. Kick off your solar journey today at LunexPower.com, your local family-owned solar energy provider. Go green, go team, and go solar.
Beef O'Brady's wants your kids to be part of the USF Bulls Player Tunnel. This season, at all USF Bulls home football games, your child can get on the field at Raymond James Stadium as the Bulls get set to take on their rivals. Sign up at Bulls Bay in the South Plaza on game day to be part of this amazing experience. Participation subject to NCAA and American Conference compliance rules. Beef O'Brady's, proud partner of the USF Bulls.
Joey Johnson back on Herd Here First for the USF Charlotte game, and our guest is left guard Thomas Schrader on the offensive line. Thomas comes to USF from Appalachian State, also played at Florida State. Thomas, I know you're from Venice High School, so you're coming back home. What's the transition been like as you've come back to not only your home area but into this new football program?
Oh, it's been great so far. One of the things is just getting back used to the heat. Being up in the mountains for just a year, it changes a lot for you. So getting back used to the heat and then getting used to the tempo, but honestly, I've enjoyed it so much. Coming back home, being close to family, and then also reuniting with Zane Herring.
What about your relationship with Zane? I guess you guys met at Florida State back in the day, and you stayed in touch. What's it like to have a guy like that as your teammate?
Being a teammate with him, again, is a dream. We were thinking about doing it the first time, but it just didn't pan out. But he's just always been there. Someone I've talked to, someone I've hung out with on breaks that we've had from football when we were at separate schools. So it's just been great being back in the same town as him.
So you've got a lot of experience in the college game. You've had ups and downs, highs and lows, injuries, pretty much everything. What has that done to kind of prepare you for this season, being that you've probably seen and done everything at this point? So how does that help you right now getting playing this team?
With everything I've been through, it's just kept me level-headed. Just put one foot in front of the other, never look too far ahead, and don't dwell on the past too much.
What about this unit, this offensive line? I mean, most of the really good offensive lines are guys are very tight, very close-knit, leaders on the team. What have you seen from this unit in terms of how it is one of the leaders of this USF team?
We are so tight-knit. We always hang out. We're trying to go to dinner tonight, figure out a spot to go to with everybody. And then as well, I know y'all see him. Cole Bess is our cap. He's a captain of a team. He leads O-line from the center position, and he does a really good job at that.
Offensive line, as we all know, doesn't get a lot of attention sometimes. Unless something goes wrong, then there's great attention. But does that fit your personality? It seems like you're maybe a guy that's not looking for a lot of fanfare. You just want to do your job. So how does that fit into kind of your personality, you know, doing this kind of job in football?
O-line's perfect for me. I'm not a big flashy guy. I'm not going to go out of my way to talk to media or, do flashy stuff on the field, like over celebrate and stuff like that. Just a hard-nosed guy that just wants to get the job done and score touchdowns.
What gives you satisfaction out there? I mean, obviously winning games and scoring touchdowns, but when you're talking about the grind, and it's a grind, you're blocking big strong guys out there. What really makes you motivated to play this game beyond, you know, the obvious scoring and winning and all? What's the day-to-day stuff that you really enjoy?
Just preparing. Like Connor McLaughlin said during one of his speeches, you can never master football. So there's something you can learn every day out on the field, and that's something I've took to heart this year and really tried to do. And just continue to grow my game.
So, Thomas, one final thing. You know, we're four games in. The Bulls have gotten off to a 3-1 start against some really good competition. Now you begin conference play. What have you seen from this team in the four games that gives you a lot of confidence about the rest of the way, and what kind of personality do you see for the Bulls so far?
We got a bunch of athletes on this team that can go make plays at any given point. We just got to stay focused on the task at hand and not look too far down the schedule. But I think we can go as far as however focused we stay. We got to stay focused, though.
All right. That's Thomas Schrader, left guard of the USF Bulls. Thanks, Thomas.
I love when the offensive linemen were basketball players in high school. You run those stagger screens off those guys, ain't nobody going to fight through that screen. Thomas Schrader was a pretty good basketball player at Venice High School. All right, that's going to do it for our pre-recorded version, this first hour of the pregame show. And don't forget, Friday at 6 o'clock, we'll be live at Raymond James Stadium for the 7 o'clock kickoff against Charlotte. This is heard here first on the South Florida Bulls Radio Network.